for this opportunity. And I'm going to talk about this joint work with Steve Powell. And what I'm going to talk about is really a class of non-surface joint algebras that you can view as generalizations of this very classical function algebras, the disk algebra and the algebra H infinity. Now, of course, both these algebras are generated by the unilateral shift on the space L2. The first one is the norm closed algebra generated by this, and the second one is the weak star closed algebra generated by the same thing. Now, if you replace L2 by the Fock space of CN, say, so the Fock space of CN is just C plus CN plus CN tensor with itself, etc. And on this space, you now have shift operators. What are the shift operators? So if you have a vector E in CN, it defines a shift operator for you, which is LE. And how does it act? Take say an element in here. So call it, let's say that here is X tensor Y. Then it will shift it to the next term, and it will be simply E tensor X tensor Y. And in particular, you have these LE1, LE2, etc., that are associated with the standard orthonormal basis of CN. Now, so these N operators, N shift operators, generate these two algebras, which I denoted AN and LN. So AN is the norm closed algebra, and LN is the weak star closed algebra. And these algebras were studied by various people, starting with the works of Popescu and the work of Davidson and Pitts. Now, one can generalize this to the Fock space, where instead of a Hilbert space, you have sister correspondence. So sister correspondences have been mentioned yesterday, and one can form the Fock space of this. So say it's a sister correspondence over A. So you have the algebra A plus E plus E tensor with itself plus E tensor with itself three times, etc. And again, you have these shift operators defined precisely as they were defined here, except that now you cannot necessarily take a basis, but you can still look at these shift operators and talk about the algebras, norm closed and weak star closed, that they generate. So the norm closed algebra, we write T plus E and call it the tensor algebra, and the weak star closed algebra is H infinity E, and we call it the Hardy algebra. So this one is sort of a generalization of the disk algebra, and this one generalizes the H infinity algebra. Okay, but what you see here, or here, is really you are summing over the fibers of a product system over N. Okay, again, product systems were mentioned yesterday. So we have, let's say we have N. Here is N, so 0, 1, 2, etc. And we have a product system. So a product system has to be very, very simple here. It's A, the algebra here, and E squared in tensor sense, and E tensor with itself three times, etc., etc. Okay, and these are the algebras associated with this product system. Now, what I want to do in this talk is to discuss product systems or similar constructions for product systems over N squared. Okay, so what is a product system over N squared? So we have, instead of N, we now have the lattice n squared, and so something like that. And we have, for every KL in n squared, we have a space, say a C-star correspondence, or in this talk it will be mostly Hilbert spaces, but at any rate, we have this space, which is the fiber line over this point, but we also have the isomorphisms that do the multiplication for you. So if you have if you have the fiber over the point K1, L1, and here is the fiber over the point K2, L2, then there should be an isomorphism that takes you from this tensor product to X of K1 plus K2, L1 plus L2. So these isomorphisms are part of the definition of the tensor of the product system, and of course they have to be defined in such a way that there is associativity, which I won't describe, but everyone can figure out what it means. And so this is what we denote by a product system over n squared. It's the fibers plus these maps. Okay, now it's very, very easy to see that if you call this the fiber sitting over the point 0, 1, 0, you call it E, and you denote by F the fiber sitting over the point 0, 1, then you basically have everything. And so here, for instance, you will have E tensor F, or at least something isomorphic to it. So up to isomorphism, and this is E tensor with itself here, and so on and so forth. We can write down precisely what are the fibers. But if we want to have the full structure of the product system, we also need to know this point above the point 1, 1, on one hand, we have E tensor F. On the other hand, we have F tensor E. So these two things should be isomorphic. So you should also fix an isomorphism, say U, from E tensor F to F tensor E. And in fact, you can see that once you do this, so once you have E, F, and U, you can produce the whole product system with all the isomorphisms and everything using associativity. But this has to be fixed. So now we are looking at such a product system, and we can also talk about shift operators. But this time we shift both to the right and upward. So if we have if E is an element of E, then we can have LE, and LE will take an element in this space and will tensor it on the left by E, therefore moving it to here, to the right. And similarly, so that's if E is in E. And if F is in F, then we have something similar, which we denote by LF. And then if we take an element in here and tensor it by LF, apply LF to it by tensoring it on the left by F, it really moves it upward. So this is the structure, and you can talk about the algebra you get from the algebra generated by these shift operators, the norm algebra, the norm closed algebra, and the weak star closed algebra. Okay, that's a general plan, but in this talk I will be much more modest, and my product system will be only of Hilbert spaces and in fact, finite dimensional Hilbert space. But the question or the problem can be stated in more generality. So here it goes, and here we study the two-dimensional analogs. A special case are algebras associated with rank 2 graphs, which I didn't go very much into, but I'll come to this in a moment. Such with a single vertex. Such algebras were studied by Cripps and Power, and more recently by Davidson, Power, and Yang. And the algebras we consider are generated by shift operators on this Fock space. So the Fock space is what you get when you sum up all the fibers. But there is also U in this notation because the U plays an important role. The U is what determines the isomorphism of E tensor F and F tensor E. So in this, with this notation, I would really let E be CN. So as I said, I'm talking about finite dimensional spaces. So E is CN and F is CM. And then what is U? U should give you an isomorphism from CN tensor CM to CM tensor CN. So from a N by M space to an M by M space. So it's a unitary N by M by A, N by M N times N N times M by N times M matrix. Okay, it's written. Okay, so this is what we see here. Now, this is just for notational purpose. It would be convenient to index the rows and the columns of U not by numbers running from 1 through nm, but by pairs of numbers. The first one running from 1 through n, and the second one from 1 through m. So we have this matrix. U is U, I, J, K, L. Okay. We also fix orthonormal bases EI and FJ. So EI, orthonormal basis of E, which is CN, and FJ, orthonormal basis of F, respectively. And the matrix U will be used to identify E tensor F with F tensor E through the equation, this equation. Okay, because you see EI tensor FJ is an element in E tensor F, but we also want to think of it as an element in F tensor E. So it's done by this unitary matrix. So this is the basic commutation relation that we are dealing with here. Okay. Here again is Fock space that I wrote before, and the shift operators that I basically defined, but you see them here. Here is LE. It acts on a typical element of the Fock space by tensoring it on the left by E. And LF does the same, except that if you want the resulting element to look like we write these elements, so with the E's on the left and the F's on the right, you will have to move this F across the E's using the commutation relation. Okay, so this is what is written here. And clearly, when you think about it for a moment, you will see that the relations between the EI and the FJ that you see here gets translated into a similar relation between the shift operators. Okay. So this is the shift operators that we will deal with. And now, the unital semigroup generated by these shift operators and the identity will be denoted is F sub U plus, and the algebra generated is C F sub U plus. So this C F sub U plus is the algebra generated by all the shift operators and the identity, just algebraically. And the norm closure of this is AU, and the weak star closure is LU, generalizing AN and LN that we had before. And I should say recently, Davidson, Power, and Yang also studied this algebra, and they figure out what is the C-star envelope of the algebra AU. Okay, but these are non-self-adjoint algebras, so we don't take the adjoints. It's just Banach spaces, Banach algebra. Okay, so these are the definitions of the algebras that will be interested. And what I would like to do is study the isomorphisms and automorphisms of these algebras. Okay, so when are these, when when is AU and AV isomorphic, and what are the automorphisms of AU or AV? Well, same question. Okay, so the first thing is to figure out what is the character space of the of this algebra. Now, so a character is a multiplicative linear functional. Now, if you have a multiplicative linear functional in the algebra, and you have these relations, suppose that we write Zi for the image of Lei. So it takes Lei to Zi, and it takes Lfj to Wj. Then clearly, if I write here, instead of Lei, Zi, instead of Lfj, Wj, then the relation I get will have to be satisfied. And so we end up looking at this variety, which is just what I've said. You take all the points, Z is just Z1 to Zn, and W is W1 to Wm, and they should satisfy this. So you look at this. These are supposed to tell you something about the character space. And in fact, what you have is the following. So here it is. First I'll write omega. Omega is sub U for this variety intersected with the closed biball. And then we have the following proposition. The linear multiplicative functionals on the algebra generated by these shift operators are in one-to-one correspondence with points in the variety. That's very easy to check. The characters of the non-closed algebra are in one-to-one, or actually also homomorphic in terms of the topology, to omega U. And when you ask yourself for which character of AU it actually extends to LU, then the answer is here. It's if and only if the point ZW lies in the open biball. And let me also note this notation. So if the point ZW is in omega, the character corresponding to it will be written alpha ZW. Okay, so every character is of this type. Oh, I'm sorry. Here in LU, the characters are W star continuous. Oh yeah, that's automatic in a Banach algebra.
Why do you have to inspect them all?
Because they are non-continuous.
Isn't VU already containing that part of the ball?
No. VU is not. Because VU describes the characters of the algebra. And that has nothing to do with norm decreasing. Okay, that's just algebra. But once you do it on a Banach algebra, it has to be norm decreasing. Okay, so certainly the character space plays an important role when you want to study the structure of an algebra, but it turns out that there is a subset of this character space that plays an important role here, and this is something called the core. And the core is defined as follows. So what you do is this. For every ij, remember, ij, the rows of U are indexed by pairs, ij. So for every ij, take the ij row of U. It has length n times m. Fold it into a matrix, an n by m matrix. And denote this matrix by uij. This is this matrix. Also, we denote by E, capital Eij, the matrix unit, with 1 in the ij position, n by m. 1 in the ij position and zeros elsewhere. Now we subtract these two matrices, and this is what I denote by Cij. So we get a certain matrix, Cij, for every I and j. Now it's very easy to see that this relation that is written here amounts to the same thing as this, what you see here. That it's the inner product of Cij applied to W with Z bar, a Z conjugate, is zero for every ing. That turns out to be the same as the equation you see over there. Okay, but this brings the definition for the core. The core is the set of all points in the closed bibole such that W is in the kernel of this matrix Cij and Z is in the kernel of the transpose matrix. So certainly the core is contained in VU. But you can imagine that geometrically it's much simpler because it's a bibole. It's not some variety, some strange variety. It's a bibole. It's much simpler. But it plays an important role, and you will see why in a moment. Okay, but before we do this, in order to analyze homeomorphisms or isomorphisms, you note that every given an automorphism psi of AU, it defines a map on the character space of AU in the natural way. The character phi goes into phi composed with psi inverse, and then we get a map theta sub psi on the character space. And clearly, it's a homeomorphism, and it maps the interior into the interior. And similarly, if it's a automorphism of LU, you get it on the interior of the of this omega U. So at any rate, every automorphism of the algebra gives you a homeomorphism of the character space. And the notation again is theta sub psi. Okay. So now what is the importance of the core? The importance of the core lies in this theorem, the characterization of the core. Basically, what it says is that the core is precisely the orbit of the 0, 0. 0, 0 is clearly in the core. The orbit of the 0, 0 under all these maps coming from automorphisms. This is the core. And this is what you see here. And in fact, it says more because it says that you can look at only algebraic automorphisms and you get this, or you can look at completely isometric automorphisms of the bigger of the LU algebra that restrict to automorphisms of the norm closed algebra. Whether you look at this family or that family, the orbit is precisely the core, or rather not the core, but the core intersected with the open bibole. Okay, so because I'm taking here only points in the open bibole. Okay, so this is this, but and I want to say something about the proof of this. I hope I have enough time, but I denote this this automorphism that you get here by theta sub ZW. That's the automorphism that takes that imposes the map that takes 0, 0 into ZW. And these automorphisms are obtained via the analysis of Voiculescu for automorphisms of the Teplitz extension of the Kuntz algebra. But let me say something about the proof of that theorem. Okay, so first, something about the proof. This is not a complete proof, but a rough sketch of it. Of 3 implies 1. So if we know that there is an algebraic isomorphism that takes 0, 0 into ZW, how do we know that ZW is in fact in the core? Here we need this this lemma. And this lemma tells you something about, if you like, nest representations of the algebra, not without taking closures right now. But it's not just nest representations, it's homomorphisms from the algebra to the upper triangular 2x2 matrices with the same element on the diagonal. Okay? So, well, you see, if you are looking at something like this, as a row that takes, that maps you a homomorphism like this, then it's very clear that the Zi and the Wj will give you characters, will give you a character. So you just, because you just take it first to the 2x2 matrices, upper triangular 2x2, and then restrict to the diagonal. And the diagonal, recall, is just the same number along the diagonal. So that will be a character. So the ZW will be an element in VU. But now you can ask yourself, okay, so we fix an element ZW like that. What are the lambda I and the mu j that we can fill in here in order to really get a homomorphism, just the multiplicativity? Well, turns out that you have this. A point lies in the core if and only if every lambda mu would do. That's an if and only if condition. Okay, so that's very useful to prove 3 implies 1. Why? Because you take this algebraic automorphism and you take a point like that, like we have there in 3, and then for every pair lambda mu, if you you take the row coming from this lambda mu, since 0, 0 is in the core, this is well-defined map, homomorphism. So you compose it with psi inverse. It gives you another homomorphism of the algebra, and therefore it has to be of the same form, but this time with ZW here instead of 0, 0. That's because of this property of ZW that's appearing in 3. Okay, now you can check that what you get from this is you get a map psi taking lambda mu into lambda prime mu prime, say, this is lambda prime mu prime, and it is continuous and it is injective. And if the point is not in the core, then the set of all these pairs form a subspace of a strictly lower dimension. And so a strictly lower dimension, and the image, and so that maps this one into this subspace. And this is impossible. And so that's how you prove 3 implies 1. Now the other part, maybe I will keep this and move this, but the other part is 1 implies 2, because 2 implies 3 is obvious, but it's only 1 implies 2, and maybe I shouldn't go into this. Just say that it is what we do is we apply the analysis of Voiculescu, but what works nicely here is that if we produce his automorphisms on the algebra generated by the LEI only, then it keeps the where is the that's really the next slide. It keeps the commutation relations. So if we apply it only to the algebra generated by LEI, we still have the same commutation relation that we had before. And that allows us to construct the automorphism, and eventually we get, not only we get an automorphism, but we actually are able to show that this automorphism is unitarily implemented. That is also using the fact that in Voiculescu's construction, the automorphism is unitarily implemented, and that becomes here too the case. Okay, so I think I'll leave it at that. I think I'll have time to go into more details. Okay, so we get this family of automorphisms satisfying this. For every point in the core, you get an automorphism. Okay. Now I want to describe another family of automorphisms, and the punchline at the end would be that these are all. I mean, compositions of these are all. Okay. The other ones are really sort of simple-minded ones. So here's the definition. An isomorphism, I do it even in the case of two algebras. An isomorphism psi from AU to AV is called graded if it maps the span of the shift operators into itself. So you see this definition, well, maybe LE1 can be some combination of the LEIs and the LFIs. We'll see at the end that cannot happen. But certainly a simpler definition or a simpler kind of automorphism is what you see in 2. An isomorphism from AU to AV is said to be bigraded isomorphism if there are unitary matrices A and B that do this, what you see here. So in other words, what you get is that the shift operator LEI is mapped into a combination of shift operators of the same kind, LEJ, and something that, and the same thing happens for the F. So the, in that case, we say that this is, if you have such an isomorphism, it is said to be bigraded. Now, if N equals M, you can also play interchanging E and F. And this is what's described in 3. If N is not M, then you cannot do it. But if N is equal M, then you can have a graded isomorphism that takes LEI to a combination of LFJ. And similarly for the LFK. Okay, so in the first case we write psi AB, in the second case we write psi tilde AB. At any rate, if they exist, then they are both unitarily implemented. You can write down precisely how, using the matrices A and B, they are both unitarily implemented. But do they exist? Well, it's very easy to check. That if you have a bigraded isomorphism like PsiAB, then AB, U, and V should satisfy equation 9 here. So the V and the U should be unitarily equivalent, but via a matrix of this form, A tensor B, A and B are unitary matrices. Okay, and a similar statement applies for the psi tilde. So at this point, it makes sense to give it a definition. And if U, V are matrices, unitary matrices like this, and there are A, B satisfying equation 9, then we say that U and V are product unitarily equivalent. So they're unitarily equivalent, but using product unitary matrices, like that. Okay. And now we have the following. I should, first of all, note, Given an isomorphism from AU to AV, and right now I can assume that the dimensions for V are different from the dimensions of U, we get a homeomorphism on the character spaces, and this homeomorphism takes 0,0 to the core. That's basically what we saw before. We saw it for automorphisms, but it's true for isomorphism as well. And in fact, the proposition says that the core is mapped into the core, onto the core. Okay, and now we have the following proposition. So if you have such an isomorphism, even just algebraic, and theta sub C is the associated map on the character space, on omega u, suppose now that 0,0 gets mapped into 0,0. Well, the idea is very simple. We know now how to move 0,0 into another point of the core by the theta zw that we had before. So it sort of reduces the problem into automorphism that takes the 0,0 into 0,0. So we look at something like this. And then we have the following. First of all, turns out that the dimensions N and M should be the same. Or rather, as a set, they should be the same. N and M might be interchanged, but Let's assume that n equals n prime and m equals n prime by after interchanging E and F. But the other thing is also interesting. There are unitary matrices U and V such that the map on the unit ball on the character space is really given by these two matrices, U and V. Okay? And the third one is that if it happens to be not just algebraic isomorphism, but isometric isomorphism, then this psi has to be bigraded isomorphism. So basically, if we are talking about isometric isomorphism that maps the origin into the origin, then it has to be bigraded isomorphism. In other words, of a very simple form. Now, about the proof of this, the proof of 1 and 2 uses arguments of that Steve used in previous paper, and I won't go into this. But for 3, what you do, so suppose you have an isometric isomorphism, and you want to show that this is a bigraded isomorphism, then first, using the property that 0 maps 0, 0 goes into 0, 0, you can see that psi takes a typical shift like LEI into LUEI. That's the U appearing in 2. LUEI plus something with X, which is a sum of higher order terms. And then we apply this equation to the ground vector, the vector, I don't have it here, but the vector in the Fock space that lives on the in the corner in C, and then you have here this simple equations or inequality that tells you that X applied to this element has to be zero, and from this it's obvious that X itself is zero, and follows from Pythagoras, because this vector and this vector has to be orthogonal, because the X is of of higher order terms. So at any rate, we get that this X is zero, and so LEI gets mapped into LUEI, and that was the definition of bigraded isomorphism. So we now get the following. It's easy to see that every graded isomorphism maps the zero into zero, and therefore, using the theorem we had before, we know that maybe I should leave the theorem and not the proof, or not the, I call it proposition here. And so using this proposition, it's either bigraded or it's of the other type in case n equals m. So there are no graded isometric isomorphisms that sort of maps you from EI to some combination of EI and FI, and FJs. But here comes this theorem. The following statements are equivalent for unitary matrices U and V. There is an isometric isomorphism between AU and AV. So these two algebras are isomorphically isometric. That's the same as there is a graded isometric isomorphism from one to another. Doesn't mean that a given isomorphism has to be graded, but if there is one, then there is a graded one. And it's also equivalent, by what we saw before, to the pair of matrices, U and V, being what I called product unitary equivalent. So that's And the proof, you can see it here. If you have psi, which is an isometric isomorphism, and you write ZW for the image of the map on the character space, so this point is in the core, and by the characterization of the core, there is a completely isometric isomorphism phi of the algebra AV, such that 0, 0 is mapped into that point. So now you see, where is this? Psi takes 0, 0 into this point, and phi takes 0, 0 into this point. So if you take the composition psi composed with phi inverse, it maps 0, 0 into z0, into 0, 0, 0. But by what we saw before, this means that this composition has to be a graded isometric isomorphism, and that from this two follows. So this is the theorem. So it tells you precisely when two algebras like this are isomorphic. And from what we saw, we also know what are the automorphisms or isomorphisms between two, if they exist. And that's given here. So, yeah, first I should say, in the remark, let's look at the remark in two, if the two non-closed algebras are isometrically isomorphic, then the weak star closed algebras are also, because these isomorphisms are really, I didn't put the explanation here, but they're really the isomorphism we construct are really all of them unitarily equivalent. So they extend to the weak star closure. And but here is the theorem that describes all the automorphism of such an algebra. So let's assume n is different from m. That's only not to talk about the case of where the e's are taken into the f's, just to make the statement a bit simpler. Then the isometric automorphisms of AU are all of this form. So they are compositions of one of these Voiculescu maps or automorphisms coming from Voiculescu analysis and these bigraded automorphisms. And in the case n equals n, then we have to take into account also the those psi tilde that I showed before. But at any rate, these are all the automorphisms or isomorphisms between two different algebras or the same algebra. Okay. What I want to do now, so this is what you see now on the board, on the two boards, is basically the punchline. But what I want to do now is go through some examples and see how you get it, how you can figure out what are the automorphisms for specific examples. Okay, so in fact, what I want to do is I want to discuss the case where n equals m equals 2. So I want to see what happens if I have E is C2 and F is also C2. So what happens there? But before we do this, let's know the following. It's not hard to show. I won't go into the proof, but one can easily show that if the core contains a vector ZW and Z is different from zero, then the dimension of the kernel of U minus I, in other words, the multiplicity of one as an eigenvalue, is larger or equal than M. And similarly, if W is different from zero, it has to be larger or equal than N. And if both of them are different from zero, then it has to be larger or equal than n plus m minus 1. That will help us in examples because you will see now. We start considering the case n equals m equals 1 equals 2, and I want to work out different cases by the dimension of this kernel of u minus I. In other words, again, the multiplicity of 1 as an eigenvalue. So let's assume multiplicity is 0. 1 is not an eigenvalue. then we have the okay. Let me. Then we have the following. For every point in the closed biball, it lies in omega u, the character space, if and only if that can be easily seen from the commutation relation. If and only if this vector lies in this kernel. But we've just said that this kernel is zero, so therefore this vector has to be the zero vector. You think about it for a while, and you see that that means that this is the set we are talking about. Okay, so either either both z's are zero or both w's are zero. And so this is the character space in this case. But more interestingly, the core is just the point 0, 0. That comes from the here, because the dimension is zero, so neither one nor two are satisfied, and so the only point in the core is the zero point. And from what we know, if the zero point is the only point in the core, and every automorphism will map the core into the core, so it will map 0 into 0, and if it maps 0 into 0, it has to be bigraded isomorphism. And that's it. These are all of them. I'm sorry, not just bigraded, but you can have this interchanged. But that's basically it. So every isometric isomorphism of AU is graded, and the isometric isomorphisms of AU are given by pairs of unitary matrices such that either commute with you or intertwine. So this is satisfy the relations we saw before on the board. So that completes the case for D equals zero. Let's see what happens if D equals one. Again, the core is again trivial. And so again, you conclude the same in the same way that that's what I wrote here in the last two lines. It is still true that all the isometric isomorphisms and automorphisms of these algebras are all graded. The character space is somewhat more complicated, and it is possible that it will be larger than the one we have over there. It can be either the one we have over there or something larger. And I won't go into more details here. So this is the case D equals 1. So again, in this case too, we know precisely what are the what are the isomorphism. Now the case in the case equal d equals 2, you can have lots of possibilities. And it's possible that the core will contain non-zero vectors, but as the lemma we had before shows, it does not contain a vector for which both z and w are different from zero. And all other possibilities can occur, and here are three diagonal matrices for which the core you get is different in each case. And but still, you know precisely what are the isometric automorphisms of these algebras. In the first case, it's just the graded ones. In the second case, it is graded, composed possibly with those that take W10 into those that are constructed via Voiculescu's analysis. And so we have it. Now, in all these cases that I described now, we don't have, I mean, a question one can ask is, given U and V, how can we know whether the U and the V are product unitarily equivalent? In all these cases, we don't have a complete answer. But in the third case, we do. The third meaning, or maybe it's the fourth, but at any rate, when D equals 3, then it turns out that it is more tractable. And for D equals 3, we have this corollary that says that every matrix U with kernel of U minus I is equal to 3 is product unitarily equivalent to a unique matrix of this form. And never mind what is this form, but it just tells you precisely what are, here is a family of matrices that are no two of them are product unitarily equivalent, and every other one with this condition on the dimension is product unitarily equivalent to one of these. And then you can figure out what is the character space for each of these matrices, and what is the core for each of these matrices. And this is for A equal to zero, this is the core. For A different from zero, the core is trivial. And again, it tells you precisely what are the isometric isomorphisms of these algebras. So in this case, we know that this theorem that A of UA lambda and A of UB mu are isometrically isomorphic if and only if A is equal B and lambda is equal either mu or mu bar. Mu bar is to take care of this exchange thing. And when A is different from zero, the isometric automorphisms of A, U, zero, lambda are all bigraded, and when A is zero, there are some that are not bigraded. And, the last case is just, this was the case where the dimension is 3, when the dimension is 4, it's sort of trivial. I'll put it on the board anyway. When D is 4, this means U is just identity, and then both the character space and the core is everything, and the isometric isomorphisms you get by taking bigraded things with these theta ZWs. All of them are possible. Thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any ideas if you can include two vertices?
Oh. You mean when you have more than one vertex?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I mean, eventually I want to understand the case where you have general correspondences, and this would be a special case of that, but or even just. Graph algebras, and then you get K graphs. But right now we don't have. Of course, I should have said for a graph algebra with a single vertex, the matrix U corresponding to it is a permutation matrix. I mean that's. The what?
The L E I.
The
commute with the LF chain.
Commute with respect to U, not commute in the usual sense. L E I, L F J is not L F J, L E I.
What
turn off? Oh. Thank you.